That. How are you this morning?
I'm fine.
Good, good. It's a privilege to speak with you, sir.
Now, Bob, I'm going to zero out this clock, and when you start to see the numbers ascend, we're working our way up to 11 minutes.
Okay.
As soon as we start, I'll reset it.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Coming down in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
My guest today is Professor Franz De Waal, one of the best-known primatologists in the world and probably the world's foremost expert on bonobos, which are, if you're not familiar with them, our closest relatives along with chimpanzees. Dr. De Waal, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be there.
And you're in Philadelphia, actually. We are speaking to you from Philadelphia. How is the weather down there?
The weather is gorgeous. It's like 70 degrees or something.
Really? We're a bit overcast here, so I guess you get the better of it this morning anyway. Okay, now, your book that you just wrote, you've got, I think, 9 books, if I remember correctly. I have 3 of them here. This one is The Bonobo and the Atheist in Search of Humanism Among the Primates. Now, the premise is basically religionists feel that we need a godhead for morality, and you feel that it is innate, and you point to the behavior of bonobos in chimps. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so often when you talk about the origin of morality, people think it starts with God and religion, and that actually God gave us our moral rules. I think it's the other way around. We evolved morality probably long before we had the current religions, which are just 2 or 3,000 years old. And I cannot imagine that 100,000 years ago or 200,000 years ago, our ancestors did not have a sense of fairness and did not have rules of right and wrong and did not punish people for the wrong behavior. So I'm sure we had moral systems in place long before the current religions. And then we added religions to it. And so I explore a little bit in the book also, what does religion actually do? It probably fortifies or codifies these moral rules. So it's probably not completely unnecessary. It's maybe has a constructive role to play, but I don't think it's the source of morality. So that's a message for most atheists. Most atheists often worry about it. Can I be moral without having religion? And my answer is probably yes.
Well, you also point out that there's a case where a male, I think it was a chimpanzee actually, died, and he was the only one who could crack open these macadamia nuts. So the females, these are in captivity, the females took turns going to the cracking station where they used a rock, and they would not violate that because they were afraid of retribution. Now, that's not really morality, that's fear.
Well, it relates to morality because we often say in order to have a moral system, you need to have inhibitions in place. You cannot have just act on all the emotions and impulses that you have. You have to inhibit them. And there's actually quite good research on bonobos and chimpanzees of the inhibitions that they have. We do experiments where we sort of tease them with food, and if they wait longer for the food, they can get more food, a bit like the delayed gratification stuff that they do with children. And if you do that with the great apes, they're perfectly good at it. And so they have impulse control, which is an essential part of human morality.
Is that not based on fear? You mean it's based on just their sense of what's right?
Well, in those chimpanzees, of course, it was partly based on the hierarchy and fear of the hierarchy. And, of course, the hierarchy is one big system of impulse control where you are low ranking, you need to behave, and if you don't behave, you will get punished. And I think this whole system of authority is part of our moral systems. We also punish people for wrong behavior in our moral systems.
Yes, we do, but presumably people who believe in God, well, maybe it's a fear of God. They don't want to be punished.
Well, believe in God and religion, that there's an authority system right there in place with the super alpha male up in the sky. And it's very similar to a chimpanzee community. So I draw parallels with these things. I'm not saying that what chimpanzees do is exactly the same as a human moral system.
No, surely not.
I'm looking mostly at, let's say, empathy, sense of fairness, things that we value very much in our moral systems. And that kind of characteristics we can see in bonobos and chimpanzees.
Uh-huh. Now, you don't, you eschew such labels as atheist, agnostic, and person of faith. You call yourself an apathist.
Yeah.
Give us that's a fascinating concept. I'd never heard it before, but it fits perfectly. Just tell us a bit about that.
So the agnostic doesn't know if God exists. The atheist knows that God does not exist, and the apatist, which is what I am, doesn't particularly care whether God exists. I'm not interested in the question. I think we shouldn't spend a whole lot of time on whether God is there or is not there, because we will never, as a scientist, we will never resolve this issue. And I don't think it's an interesting question at all. For me, the interesting question is, why be moral? Why do you want to be good? Is there any good reason to be like that? Why do we live? Why are we on Earth? So existential questions, those are interesting questions to me. But whether God exists, I think, is irrelevant.
Spoken like a true scientist. Now, we know, and those of us who know bonobos know, that they use sexual posturing to express their aggression and to relieve that tension. Now, I've always wondered, I've got three of your books. I've got Bonobo, Our Inner Ape, and this current one, The Bonobo and the Atheist. And of course, the theme is that the love ape, perhaps we could call him, is they're always posturing. And I wonder, is it actual sex, or is it just, well, I'm going to climb on, go through the motions, and that relieves the tension? Because there are juveniles involved, there are male-male, female-female. Mm-hmm. It can't all be just sex, right? What is it?
No, people often think when they hear that bonobos have sex for peace, so to speak, that they are doing it the whole day. But, you know, their encounters are usually 10 seconds, maybe 15 seconds.
Yeah, that's the videos I've seen, right? So it's not really
sex.
They're
really not doing it the whole day, but they have very frequent sexual interactions, and they're truly sexual in the sense that they rub their clitorises together, or if it's females, or you have a real copulation, and they're screaming and yelling involved and giving the impression of orgasm. So it's really not a superficial thing that they do, but they do it very quickly.
Well, do they?
Do it usually after tension. So let's say you introduce food, the food induces competition, but instead of fighting over the food, they have quick sex and then they share the food.
Well, do they have a fake orgasm, do you think?
Oh, they could, potentially. I cannot determine that. You know, even for humans, that's a bit hard to find out.
You took umbrage at this fellow, who is the Dutch guy, or the French guy, rather, Dominique, what was his name? Dominique Strauss-Kahn. He's like a chimp because he's such random behavior. And you took an insult to the chimp because chimps are much more careful about such things.
Yeah, so when Deus K, one of his adventures with women, he was accused of being a randy chimpanzee. And I said, well, that may be true for him, but that's an insult to chimpanzees because chimpanzees have impulse control. That's what we just talked about. And so this whole idea that animals just do what they want to do, and as soon as humans act like that, we say they're acting like animals. That whole conception that the emotions are not under control with animals is totally wrong, because they have, for example, a chimpanzee has just as much prefrontal cortex as humans have relative to their brain. So they have all the control centers in place, so to speak.
You know, it's interesting because whenever I want to call someone a weasel or a rat, I always say that's not fair to the weasel or the rat because they're just doing what they do. A person who's acting like a rat is being kind of mean, but a rat is just being a rat.
You know the experiment on rat altruism? There's a recent experiment where they would lock up a rat in a container and another rat would learn to open that container as a result of the wriggling and vocalizations of the trapped rat. So it's an act of empathy. It was actually presented in Science, the important journal of science, as empathy in rats. And so they would liberate the other rat, and they then pit the container against the container with chocolate pieces and see which one do they open first. And they know perfectly well what chocolate is, but they open the rat usually first, and then they share the chocolate with the rat that they liberated.
Well, now we've been talking about mammals, but the Dalai Lama, according to an anecdote you give us in the book, is that he thinks turtles have compassion. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think empathy is a mammalian characteristic. There's now evidence, a little bit of evidence for birds, and so I would probably include the birds also, mammals and birds. But, you know, when you go further down the scale, it's going to be unlikely in animals who don't have parental care, for example, like turtles. Why would there be some sort of empathy mechanism? We think in mammals, actually, it started with maternal care, and that's why empathy is more developed in females than males, which is universally true for our species, also true for chimpanzees. And that's also why oxytocin, which is a maternal hormone, has an effect on empathy.
Yeah, you say that if you spray oxytocin into the nostrils of a man, he becomes more understanding and compassionate?
Yeah, that's true.
That's very interesting. The crocodilians, some of them will carry their young in their mouth. Now, are these viviparous reptiles, or are they all egg layers?
No, they're egg layers, but my guess is that since birds have empathy, apparently, there's a few studies now, and, mm-hmm. and mammals for sure, lots of mammals, they have found it. The ancestral type may be the crocodilian family because they have parental care. Mm-hmm. And the females respond to the cries of their offspring, which is really an important part of empathy, so the being sensitive to the emotional signals of somebody else. And so the crocodiles may be the source, and that would mean that dinosaurs probably also had empathy and so on.
I got that. Okay, we have less than a minute. I just wanted to ask you really quickly. It's acknowledged that chimps and bonobos and elephants and other animals do mourn. Do you suppose that there's any inkling of their own mortality? Do they say, I'm going there someday, or is it just we lost a member?
That's very difficult. They probably have an understanding of the permanency of loss when someone dies, and that's why they try to reactivate,
right.
why they stop eating. They're very affected by it. But whether they know that one day they themselves may die like that, we have no way of knowing that,
yeah,
really.
Of course we don't. Okay, we're about done. This has been such a short time. It's been a great pleasure. I wonder if I might call you sometime when things calm down and get you back on.
Excellent. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Dr. Duval.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.